10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
What the hell are private firefighters? Now, Dr. Dave's weather.
I'm smutty book author Theo Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari, and on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain what lengths cops will go to get out of working parades and demonstrations.
Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Grand Theft Lego, another arrest, the people of Walmart. Later, Sterling every damn night.
More news, more news. Day and night around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
All right, that's enough. It's enough of that. You want to hear more of it? I'll put it on later. I'll play it later. I can't. It's a, you won't believe this, it is a 8-minute song. And even on progressive rock radio stations around America, KBPI in Denver, WMMR in Philadelphia, even on progressive rock radio stations, it was very rare that they played an 8-minute song, and almost never one of that quality. I'm Walter M. Sterling. From 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. every Sunday night, Sterling every damn Sunday. This is the radio show that everybody in American radio fears. Why? I don't see a cookie cutter in sight. Do you? Do you see anything that stinks like the rest of these shows? Yes, this show stinks, but in a completely different way. Alan H. will be sending me an angry email. Your show sucks. Your show is going to be canceled anytime soon. Do you ever been robbed? When I first moved into an apartment on my own as adulting, when I was adulting, I moved into an apartment. I lived on the top floor of a 3-story walk-up. No doorman, nothing fancy. I came home after a week, and it was a steel frame door. It was a rolled steel door. And I came home, and the peephole had been popped out. And I don't know what, I still don't know what tool they used, but they rolled back the steel from the hole as though it was paper. Put their arm in through the hole, unlocked the door, and went in and stole my TV. Nice precision job. Took the TV. I don't even think they cut the cables. They politely unscrewed the cable and took the TV. Now, the problem was that I had a 6-inch, 8-inch hole in my door. And they weren't going to, no one's going to replace that door same day. It took probably a week. Every day I had a, I put a plate over it and masking tape and protected myself with masking tape and a plate to cover up that hole. Fine. The police detectives came. They dusted for prints. Two detectives came. Two uniforms came. I felt very protected. Then, I don't know, 6, 8, 9 months later, I come home, and rather than going through the trouble of popping the lock or popping the peephole, they just took like a sledgehammer or a hammer and pounded through the plaster walls until they could make a hole big enough to stick their arm in and unlock the locks, and got in, stole another TV. Left, neat, polite, that's all they got, was another TV. All right, well, that made me feel pretty vulnerable, but again, it required plaster and a improved door frame, and it was a whole magilla. The landlord, I was renting, the landlord did that. But what did it do? What would it do to you? It made me feel vulnerable. It made me feel vulnerable. And a little scared and afraid somebody was going to come in at 2 in the morning. But in both cases, they did it, you know, 2 in the afternoon while I was at work. But that wasn't the last time that I was robbed. I'll tell you about the other 4 in just seconds. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. If a radio station is airing this for 2 hours, they're cheating. I know Phil Zachary's station, WGAN, in Maine, they're airing the whole show. Paul Vandenberg's station in Albany, they're airing the whole show. Why? Because they're actual broadcasters. They're not weasels. And Phil's already said he sees giant ratings jumps already on his very big radio station in Maine. Walter M. Sterling, Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Liquored up blind men. Lassoed. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Becky and Dan Gaffney here.
We're back from Florida, and our daughter did not win Miss America. Thank goodness.
How do you even say anything after you said something like that? Where do we go from here?
Coming up on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain what lengths cops will go to get out of working parades and demonstrations. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Grand Theft Lego. Another arrest. The people of Walmart. Later. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling at Night, inspired by Jenna Kim Jones.
I told my husband he could no longer watch Hallmark movies with me this year. Because he's always asking stupid questions. Like, haven't we seen this one already?
20 minutes past the hour, 20 minutes past the hour, live radio show coast to coast from Maine to Sacramento. Walter M. Sterling, Sterling every damn night. I was robbed 6 times in the same apartment in Manhattan. The next time, there was a skylight in the kitchen. I came home from work, and in the kitchen was the skylight on the floor of the kitchen. A genius had dropped through the skylight, gotten into the apartment, found the TV, stole it, went out the front door and left. Police come, but every time, this is robbery number 3, every time I call the police to come and investigate, the first time they sent detectives and uniforms, second time they sent a uniform, and the uniform guy said, you know what you should do with this fire escape outside your front door? What you should do is you should take a couple razor blades, cut them in half, attach them to the ladder. Then, the next time, there were windows on, it was a floor through. So in the back, there were windows to a courtyard. I don't even know how they got up there, but they smashed through the windows on the top floor of this apartment building. They smashed into my apartment, came in, stole the TV, and went out the front door. The feeling of vulnerability and lack of safety and losing something that was important is hard. That's a difficult thing to deal with when you know somebody's been in your apartment. Forget the TV. You know somebody's been in your apartment, that it's exposed to the elements. You're out there. All right, life goes on. You move into a house. That was your first apartment. Now you move into a house. What is the worst possible thing, day-to-day, normal maintenance, normal operation, that you and I can experience in a home with a cellar or a basement, depending on where in the Midwest you live? You open the door in the morning to the cellar or basement, depending on where you live, and what do you see? Water on the basement floor. Again, vulnerability. Again, fear of where is this coming from? And the time it takes to just figure out where is the water coming from. But those are the worst moments of the day. Finding out where the water comes from, that's pretty bad. But the time it takes from opening the cellar door to finding where the water's coming from, those are actually more anxious than knowing where the water's coming from. You ferret around. Last time I had water in the basement, it took us half a day to figure it out. It was a little pinhole leak in a 100-year-old steam pipe, hot water pipe. And that one little pinhole must have put half an inch of water on the cellar floor. It's a sense of vulnerability and lack of control. And then you got evicted. You lost the job. You got evicted. You had papers, lawyers, angry court issues. And you got evicted. Now, do you know what happens when you get evicted? When you were evicted, remember what happens? You don't talk to anybody about it. I know you don't. You pretend it doesn't happen. One of the myths is that lack of funds causes evictions. That's not true. Evictions cause lack of funds, because eviction will screw up your credit. It'll screw up every form you ever have to fill out the rest of your life. Good luck getting a mortgage. When you get evicted, if you have cats, if you have a dog, if you can't meet the sheriff's two-minute warning to get those cats out of that apartment, because you know what cats do. The minute they smell, sense somebody they don't know is in that apartment, they hide in ways you and I can't even imagine. They become flat and invisible. They'll hide in the box spring, right? They'll hide in the box spring. They have hiding places we don't even know about. Well, what happens to the pets if you get out without the pets? They take them to the ASPCA. You know what happens there? They spay and neuter them. Oh, your cat's already spayed and neutered? Too bad, they do it again. And you have to pay money to get them out. That sense of vulnerability and loss is profound. Uniforms were in your house. Officials were in your house. Somebody took your pets. Robbery, water in the basement, eviction. Now that I've taken you there with me, I have taken you to those moments of vulnerability with me. Now you know 10% of what it must feel like to have a home in Malibu, Pacific Palisades, all of the fire zones in Southern California. Those fire zones in Southern California, that's not a house or two. That's not a block or two. I know you know that intellectually. I want you to really internalize the suffering of thousands and thousands of people who have been robbed, suffer profound damage to their homes. They have been evicted. by nature. They have been evicted. Thousands and thousands of people have been evicted. And it's an important part of America. It's not like Jersey. At the Jersey Shore, nobody builds houses on the beach. That isn't going to be happening. But in Malibu, they build houses directly on the beach to the point where if you're driving by those houses and you're driving along the shoreline, you can't see the beach. It's right there. It's on the other side of that house. But you can't see on the other side of the house. And then between the houses, what do? They have many, many walls. It is, consider this, my friend, it is the most American place in our country, because the architecture, the emotional freedom of living on the ocean, the emotional freedom of seeing the ocean 360, which is what you get from Pacific Palisades, every inch those people moved away from the east, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Philadelphia, they moved away from all of the tradition of our country, 200 years of tradition. They chose to move away and build a very different, very American life. There's no other place in the world like Southern California. Architecture, spirit, education, careers, the world's imagination is held in Hollywood. The imagination of the world is created in Southern California television, radio, movies. It is the most American place in the world, more than any other place in our country. And it's decimated. Don't think they'll rebuild. Rebuild what? Are you insane? Those are tens of thousands of homes. Over 20 people have already died. This isn't like, well, we have to figure out what the Democrats did. No. This is America's culture in a 40-mile radius that is the epicenter of the imagination of the world. When people go, you know, it'd really be fun to see what America's like. They're sitting in France, England, Ukraine. They're like, boy, I'd love to see what America's like. They're thinking of the America that they learned from the geniuses, the creatives in Southern California. And those people have been evicted. Their homes have been destroyed by water and fire. And their belongings have been robbed. All at once. You and I, gee, we might be robbed. Might have water in the basement. God help us if we have an eviction. No. This happened to all of them all at once in 60 seconds. You and I can't imagine that. And then they look around and it happened to everybody else they knew. This is a profound, horrible experience. And you and I will talk to two of our friends who live in Southern California in seconds. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Sterling, every damn night, inspired by Alan Hoggins.
As far as social media goes, you can follow me on the bulletin board at Kroger's or my chart.
Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night.
I don't need to see another talking head standing in front of fire damage without the camera ever moving to show me the fire damage. I could care less about the clothespin on the back of his jacket. I could care less about these reporters standing center frame without letting me see the fire damage. What kind of crap reporting is that? I don't need to see all these reporter auditions. Instead, I need to hear from your friends and mine who live in Southern California, who are experiencing the feelings of seeing, gee, 100 yards away is a giant fire near my house. And that's why you and I are talking to Randy West. Randy West is a good friend and a great broadcaster, television, radio, and the premier expert on game shows in the United States of America. Randy, thank you for being on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Well, I have to be on with you, Walt, because you're single-handedly saving the AM radio dial every damn night. I think it's wonderful. Let me tell you about the fires. Let me get into it.
No accounting for taste. There's no accounting for taste. What you just said. Now I'm going to shut up. The stage is yours. Please tell us what you're feeling.
Well, it is frightening. I've got fire to my left and fire to my right, my east and my west. I've got 10 miles leeway on each side. I'm in Burbank. I feel lucky because there are thousands of people all over the Southland, as we call it, who are homeless and don't know what they're going to do. And their insurance companies are, some of them have been canceled in the last few months. Isn't that interesting? When they canceled, perhaps they have long-range forecasts and they saw this coming. Let me tell you what this is not. This is not about cutting back water to save a species of fish. That's been reported. This is not somebody trying to burn land so they can build something in time for the Olympics and make a lot of money with some new shopping mall or something like that. That's crazy. It's been said. It's not that our governor didn't sign a pact with Trump to be president for some water deal. There's no such thing as that. It's nothing like that. It's not diversity. We didn't hire a bunch of handicapped people and women and freaks because we're trying to fill some quota of diversity. It's none of that, although that's all been said to me. Here's what it is. If you want to put it down in one sentence, it's too many people living in a hostile land. Okay? What happened here could be forecasted as potential, but never to become a reality. We live in the desert. There's no water here naturally. We have it brought in via an aqueduct from thousands of miles away. My drinking water comes from the Colorado River up at Lake Mead. It's unbelievable. When there is water here, we fill reservoirs. Where you see those flames, is no shortage of water. There are within 5 miles, three reservoirs, Hollywood Reservoir, Stone Canyon Reservoir, and Encino Reservoir. And that's where those helicopters and planes are picking up the water from. What we have is a hostile terrain, too many people living where they shouldn't be. You see houses on stilts in the middle of canyons. You know, we've encroached from a sane city into all manner of density, into places where people shouldn't be building because they're wildlands. So here's what happened. It's a perfect storm. It's entities that we've seen before, but never all at once. We have relative humidity in the single digits. That's because of high winds that are coming from the desert. They call them Santa Ana winds, but the people who named them hundreds of years ago, the indigenous people, called them Santana winds. People have bastardized the term. They are the devil winds, and they've lit fires here every damn year. Nothing on this stage, nothing on this level, because we haven't had a perfect storm of events. One, the strong winds, up to 100 miles an hour. You've heard that. 80, 90 mile an hour gusts. Then you have too many people together. I've said that already. But the other thing that you do have that's unbelievable is in tremendous vegetation that's all dry. The last rain we had here was 9 months ago, and it was 2/100th of an inch. You urinate more than that, Walt. So we've had no rain after 2 years of heavy rain. So you have nothing but dry brush and hillsides and valleys and canyons. So you add the three together, 100 mile an hour gusts, and that dry air of low, you know, single-digit humidity, you could wear a pair of corduroys and walk too fast and rub your legs together too quickly and you'd ignite a spark. And it's enough to send this whole town into flames. There's no way that anybody can deal with fire that's being thrown and ashes and dust and embers at 80, 90 miles an hour. It just ignites everything in its path because it's all dry. So it's not a shortage of water. It's none of these highfalutin theories that are being broadcast on the internet. And it's no shortage of people. There's not like some wacky thing where we laid off fire people and now we regret it. we have cities in a mutual aid situation here where if Burbank catches fire, Glendale's here in a half an hour. Glendale catches fire, Los Angeles City is here within an hour. City catches fire, Los Angeles County has its own fire department. Then there's Cal Fire, which travels the whole state with yet another fire department. You call the next state, within 4 or 5 hours, we have people here from Arizona, we have people here from Nevada, people here from Washington State, we have people here from Canada, we have people here from Mexico, and now we have people coming from South Africa. So it's not that we cut back our budget, it's not a shortage of people, it's just a perfect storm of high winds, zero humidity, single-digit humidity, and an easy spark that ignites nothing but dry land. What's going on here? People are fearing for their lives because in the 150 plus years that they've kept records, this is the worst it's ever been. We're used to fires. We have four seasons out here. You know that: earthquake, flood, fire, and award season. And we see each of those events happen every single year, but not on this scale. So what's it like to have fire on each side of me? It's scary as hell.
How close is the fire on east side of you, Randy West? How close?
10 miles to the west, and another fire 10 miles. The Eaton fire was 10 miles to the east. The Big Palisades fire that has burned 24,000 acres. You should start measuring that in square miles, not acres. That's 10 miles to the west. And in the last 24 hours, the winds have calmed, and everything seems like we might be able to get through this. However, overnight, the winds start up again, and you just heard your own meteorologist talk about high winds Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And that's enough to throw us into where I may be hitting the road, along with the thousands of other people who've had to evacuate.
Randy West, a broadcaster, a resident of Southern California, giving us the perspective of somebody in his home who can see the fires right over there. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Liquored up linemen, lassoed. Details later, strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Becky and Dan Gaffney here.
We're back from Florida, and our daughter did not win Miss America. Thank goodness.
How do you even say anything after you said something like that? Where do we go from here?
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain what lengths cops will go to get out of working parades and demonstrations. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Grand Theft Lego. Another arrest. The people of Walmart. Later. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Boom, boom, Hollywood. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night, inspired by Daughter's Secrets.
Every family member has that one daughter that's expensive, that's mentally unstable, with anger issues, with a short temper, and that hates loud noises, but she's the loud one. Is that you?
All right, that was the great Randy West we had on just seconds ago from his home in Southern California, sharing what it was like to have fires a few miles from your home. I'd like to remind you that Randy is a great author. He wrote a book, TV Inside Out, Flukes, Flakes, Feuds, and Felonies. He's got the inside stuff. He's quite the guy. His website is tvrandywest.com, tvrandywest.com. I'll post it on my Facebook page. And now, oh my gosh, from California, here's Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood.
Boom Boom Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
All right, at 51 past the hour, here's Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood with an update from California on the horrendous fire situation. What I've been explaining, Mateus, is this: imagine the vulnerability of being robbed, coming home and finding your valuables have been robbed, and then opening the cellar door and there's water in the basement and you don't know where the hell it came from. And there's an eviction notice on your door, all at the same time. That's exactly what tens of thousands of Southern Californians have experienced over the past week. They have been evicted. Their property has been destroyed. Water damage, fire damage, and all their valuables have been robbed. Oh, my God. Mateus, what updates do you have?
Well, in direct contrast to this calamity, tonight I was supposed to be calling you right at this moment from Santa Monica, near the Santa Monica Airport, directly and live from the Critics' Choice Awards, which was supposed to be happening right now, and I was going to give you a live report. Instead, it is just the opposite of what Hollywood loves to do, award themselves. It is Hollywood and all of Southern California trying to just survive, and what a dichotomy and opposite directions those two things are. And just listening, you know, Randy West is so great with his Wheel of Fortune. I'm sitting here looking at the Santa Monica Airport's wind direction monitor spinning around similarly to that wheel, telling me we've got a wind direction now south-southwest of about 9 to 10 miles an hour, which is pretty low, thankfully, to help out the fires. Let me give you a little update on some of the fires surrounding us right now. The good news first, the Kenneth Fire, which consumed about 1,052 acres in Los Angeles and Ventura counties, is now 100% contained as of 8 o'clock this morning. Three fires remain burning, and according to CAL FIRE, which is the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, the northernmost fire, the Hearst Fire, has destroyed 800 acres and is almost 90% contained. That's relatively good news in the great scheme of things. To the southeast, the Eaton Fire near Pasadena has thus far burned 14,117 acres, is now 27% contained. And just to the west of that is where Randy Rest lives, and to the west of that is the Palisades Fire, and as Randy said earlier, has laid waste to 23,714 acres and remains only 11% contained, and the evacuation zones are expanding around that fire's perimeter. A public health emergency has now been declared in L.A. County, with smoke and particulate matter posing possible immediate and long-term health threats. The destruction has caused the death of 24 people thus far, and of course, rather morbidly, more expected to be found by use of cadaver-sniffing dogs as soon as cleanup operations move forward. There's a total of 40,000 acres destroyed in the multiple areas, fires leveling 12,300 structures. Evacuation and orders are still in effect for 105,000 L.A. residents, with an additional 87,000 in evacuation warning zone. That means they're packed and waiting to leave if so called. And there's a chance of gusts tonight, too, of up to 21 miles an hour, although relatively low right now, where logically a fire warning remains in effect through Wednesday. Strangely, though, earlier in the days, the wind blew the smoke out to the ocean, and so there were many clear skies in some areas of Los Angeles where life seemed to go on as usual, but for the Palisades and Eaton Fire's ascending plumes. And you're talking about thievery through the broadcast tonight and being robbed. A curfew's now in effect around the two biggest fires from 6 at night until 6 in the morning. The National Guard is present to enforce order in order to cut down on looting. There have been over 22 arrests in the two evacuation zones since Saturday morning, with rumors spreading that some people are caught stealing Oscars, Emmys, designer bags, jewelry. Now residents have to present proof they live in a damaged area to pass, and recent reports say the police aren't even letting the residents go see the extent of their property's damage. Now, I like old movies, and I like history quite a bit, and there's a lot of history lost. In Pacific Palisades, the Belmont Music Publishers since the 70s, which had preserved and promoted the work of composer Arnold Schoenberg, was leveled, including original scores and manuscripts and printed work, which was the foundation to 20th century classical repertoire used by orchestras worldwide, completely gone. The Eaton Fire claimed two historic properties, the 1907 Zane Grey Estate, where the Western novelist wrote The Riders of the Purple Sage, totally gone. The 1887 Andrew McNally House was destroyed. McNally was the co-founder of mapmakers Rand McNally. A more recent popular attraction, the Bunny Museum, that's bunny like little furry creature, Bunny Museum of Altadena, burned to the ground with its collection of over 45,000 items. It was the world's largest collection of bunny items, according to the Guinness Book of World Records.
It's hard to believe that honor. It's hard to believe that such a thing even exists. This is this is Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, who does film reviews for us, but is a bon vivant, an expert on many, many things. And he's sharing with us information about the horror show in Southern California tonight. And Mateus, I'm looking at the clock, and I thank you very much for your participation tonight. That was a great report. You're a great man. Thank you very much. I'm Walter M. Sterling. My phone number, oh, it's a live radio show. Oh, my God, 855-839-1210. I look forward to talking to you live. Your deep and profound thoughts available to all of North America when you call 855-839-1210. We are on the air in Alaska. We're on the air in Maine. We're on the air at KFBK Sacramento and KDKA Pittsburgh and 1210 WPHT Philadelphia. And more importantly, Michael Ewing's radio station in Sebring, Florida, where I'd really like to be living right now, because right now I've experienced 10 days below freezing. Good evening. Live radio, Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Wait a second. There are private firefighters. Weather.
All news, more news. Day and night around the clock, it's all news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Love American style, bluer than the red, white, and blue.
It's a live radio show. I like that song. I'll play whatever the hell I want.
Anger grows over wasteful Hollywood stars amid the ongoing LA fires. Kim Kardashian has been accused of squandering vital water resources that could have been used to save homes. While strict restrictions limited residents to watering their gardens twice a week, Kardashian was fined for using 232,000 gallons over her allocation because she could afford to do so. Kevin Hart was also fined for exceeding water usage limits at his LA home, as well as Sylvester Stallone. With fires raging across LA, critics slammed these figures for prioritizing luxury over conservation, with some of the rich people even hiring private firefighters at $2,000 an hour to protect their homes.
Hiring what? Ladies and gentlemen, there are things that rich people know about that you and I don't even know about. That if we won the lottery or we were doing morning drive for an Odyssey station, we wouldn't even know it exists. We wouldn't even know that we could spend the money on it. You and I don't know how much it costs an hour to rent a private jet, do we? But there are people who do. There are concierge services. If you have a meeting, a business meeting, in another city, you can hire a concierge service to meet you at that rental conference room. You might, you probably know how to rent a conference room, rent an office for a couple days. You and I know how to do that. But did you know there are concierge services that will meet you at that conference room? Make sure the water glasses are full. Make sure the chocolate chip cookies are brought in and that the room is cleaned up during and after. And if somebody needs a fax done, if somebody, did I say a fax? If sorry, guys. So 2005, sorry, that there are whole companies that will come and be your butler service, be your housekeeping service, wherever you go. Concierge services will empty the ashtrays if you're sitting outside. Order the food. Handle everything. You and I don't know about that. I was looking on an American Airlines magazine, and at the bottom it said five-star service. I'm like, well, I'm a five-star kind of guy. What the heck is five-star service? Now, if you explore this, every airline has the equivalent of five-star service. What is that? You ready? This will shock you. You don't ever have to miss a plane again. You're running late. You never have to worry about that again. American and other airlines have a service, about $150 per person each way, where they'll meet you at the curb. At the curb of the airport, at the departure, in front of the departure doors. They'll meet you at the curb, a woman or man with a black walkie-talkie, nice suit, and they will walk you to security. And once you get to security, you cut the line. You get right up to the x-ray machine. They put your stuff in the x-ray machine. They're holding your boarding passes. They meet you on the other side. They walk you to the airline's lounge. Can I get you any coffee? Can I get you any food? Do you want other magazines? They will then walk you to the airplane, cut the line, go right to your seat with you. They will walk you on the plane and put you in your seat. And if you're a little late or a lot late, they have the power to hold things up until you're sitting. Didn't know about that. That's one step removed from a private jet. But now, I'm stumped. Here's something I did not know exist, and you're thinking, well, how often did you use that five-star service? I used it twice until I went broke. And then that somehow or another that stopped. But it saved my butt once. Desperate one percenters are dropping small fortunes on private professional fire crews to protect their mansions as California's most expensive wildfires continue to devour some of the wealthiest neighborhoods in Los Angeles. Private fire protection companies contract with state and local governments to help battle wildfires. But in recent years, California's fire firms have begun offering on-call services, ready to show up with their own water supplies, trucks, hoses, fire-quenching chemicals, and other industrial-grade equipment. These heroes for hire come with a hefty price tag, some outfits charging $2,000 an hour. $2,000 an hour to keep your home wet and protected. Now, if you're living in a $10 million home and it's cost you $2,000 an hour to keep it safe, that's a bargain. And many of these for-hire firefighters, they actually work for the insurance companies. It's part of an insurance deal. If you see the fire coming, you call your insurance company and say, guess what? Either you save my house, you save my house, it's going to cost you $2,000 an hour versus a $10 million claim. Who knew? I didn't know. Did you know? 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. It's a live radio show, and therefore you and I can talk live on the radio all up and down the East Coast, to Sacramento, to Paul Vandenberg's Albany, Michael Ewing's Sebring, Florida, Drew Anderson's Texas. This is Sterling every damn Sunday night.
North Charleston, South Carolina, local legend Robert Quinn, former number one draft pick in the NFL, played with the Philadelphia Eagles, the Chicago Bears. Apparently he was at the G Club, local gentleman's club. Great beverages, beautiful gals, a wonderful place to go. 2 a.m., Mr. Quinn left the club, got into his pickup, and he was having a hard time not hitting other cars. Hey, it happens. Remember, nothing good happens past midnight, especially if you've been drinking. Mr. Quinn arrested on multiple things. When the police finally showed up, they found him sitting in the passenger seat of a white Dodge. He did call a lady to come pick him up. Apparently, he just had to leave the club. Remember when you go to the strip club? You're going to have some drinks. You're going to hang out with lovely ladies. Have a plan to get home. With the rideshare apps, taxis, limos, there's a wide variety of ways to get home. Or go to the strip club with a buddy who doesn't drink. It's also strong, a strong choice. Mr. Quinn, hopefully he's held on to his NFL cash, and we wish the best for him. And hopefully he hasn't taken too many conks to the skull. From the Champagne Room, go team! It's Strippers on the Loose. I'm Velo Hool. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Becky and Dan Gaffney here.
We're back from Florida, and our daughter did not win Miss America. Thank goodness.
How do you even say anything after you said something like that? Where do we go from here?
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Randon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari, and on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain what lengths cops will go to get out of working parades and demonstrations. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Grand Theft Lego. Another arrest. The people of Walmart. Later. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by bad TikToks.
You both want my number.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not a homewrecker.
We don't live together.
It's an open relationship.
Also, Patrick has a girlfriend.
I do not. Hey, come hang out with us later. They put you up at the hotel in Flushing, right? We're in room 206.
Want me to come suck you in?
No. We just keep talking about tennis.
Good night.
Live radio, Sterling, every damn Sunday night. Live phone number, 855-839-1210. 18-wheeler, look forward to talking to you. Stuck on I-90, the luge, I pray for you. 855-839-1210. If you're on the 101 or the 5, boy, do I want to hear from you. Boy, do I want to hear from you. What do you see? What are you seeing right now? My number is 855-839-1210. I can tell you more about private firefighting companies. It's astonishing. I never knew these existed. Or I can play you more of the Love America style theme. All right. Hands, please. Hands. What would you like? One home outfitted with water sprayers continuously drenching the roof as paid-for specialists stood by all night watching for flare-ups. Private firefighters. Other firms spray the landscape with fire retardant and cocoon trees and bushes in thick fireproof material. But as these companies rack up cash, the ones who hire them are taking heat from their neighbors, more than 100,000 of whom have been forced to flee, leaving their homes under the protection of the overwhelmed public fire department. Millionaire real estate investor Keith Wasserman, he ignited a blaze of outrage when he put out a call for someone to connect him with private firefighters to save his house in Pacific Palisades. And this is what he says in his ad. Keith said, he says, "Does anyone have access to private firefighters to protect our home in Pacific Palisades? Need to act fast here. All neighbors' houses burning. We'll pay any amount. Thank you." He posted on his X account, which he later deleted because people were going to attack his home violently, I'm sure. I never knew this existed. I thought I knew about, you know, exclusive stuff that I couldn't afford. I had a long list of things that, all right, one day when I win the lottery, what am I going to get? Private firefighter was not on the list. They come, they safeguard your house, fireproof your house, soak it in water, and during a raging inferno, like they have in Southern California, they babysit your house all night. They babysit your house all day and night to make sure it isn't attacked by flames. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine that level of luxury? Somebody had to think of this. Somebody had to decide there was a market for this. What did I do? I actually prepare my show, Rick Cummings. I actually prepare my show, Rick.
And it doesn't, you know, it's an old-fashioned show. Shut up. I know you want honest feedback.
No, I don't want any honest feedback. Some clown was looking, had listened to the show. Some radio guy had listened to the show. And, you know, I have some thoughts about your show. And then he glanced down at his desk and he saw the Nielsen ratings and caught himself. He goes, well, I guess what matters is what people like.
Anger grows over wasteful Hollywood stars amid the ongoing L.A. fires. Kim Kardashian has been accused of squandering vital water resources that could have been used to save homes. While strict restrictions limited residents to watering their gardens twice a week, Kardashian was fined for using 232,000 gallons over her allocation because she could afford to do so. Kevin Hart was also fined for exceeding water usage limits at his LA home, as well as Sylvester Stallone. With fires raging across LA, critics slammed these figures for prioritizing luxury over conservation, with some of the rich people even hiring private firefighters at $2,000 an hour to protect their homes.
$2,000 an hour. But as I said, you have a $10 million home. What's $2,000 an hour? It's nothing. It actually is a good investment. But I didn't even know it was possible to do that. I didn't even know that was a thing. I looked in, I searched private firefighter, and it turned out there are dozens and dozens of jobs listed if you want to go be a private firefighter. You have to have some experience and some training as an actual firefighter in the public. But you could get a really good job. Those jobs are about $90,000 a year jobs. I searched it. I did my research. I actually prepped this show. It doesn't have to sound all prepped. I don't have to say, well, in the editorial page of the New York Times today. I have never, ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to tell you, I have never once read the editorial page of the New York Times or any other newspaper that you can think of mostly. The Post, the Bostonian, the Herald, the Boston Herald I've read, the New York Post. Anyone else? No, I don't think I've read any other editorial page. And I only would read those editorials just to confirm my own suspicions. That's what a good editorial page, it confirms my own suspicions. It's about 30 minutes past the hour, Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by seduction.
I'll go to your room, but you have to seduce me.
Public Shame Radio. Sterling every damn night.
Love America's
Speaking of Rick Cummings, one of the good guys, one of the better radio executives ever, even though he gave me no business, was John Beck, who worked for Emmis Broadcasting in St. Louis. A good guy and a good broadcaster who worked for, he worked for Emmis for like 400 years, and then he worked for iHeart, which meant he had to stay in his lane. And I'm sure at a certain point he got tired of staying in his lane. But John Beck was a good guy, and he's retiring this week, and he wisely did something most people who retire don't do, is he put his phone number on Facebook and a few other places. I'm like, yes, if you're going to retire and you want to maintain a relationship with the world, probably a good idea to post your actual real phone number on LinkedIn or something very exciting like that, right? Yeah. What I want to mention to you at 40 past the hour, 40 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling. It's a live radio show, and I want to talk to you at 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And, okay, let me talk about this.
I shared my bra size, and for some reason, girls are really mad. For context, I'm a 32 triple D, and I've been getting hate comments saying, well, like, you can't wear an extra, extra small. And that's just a 34 double D. What happened to girls support girls?
There is no such thing as girls supports girls. This is one of the greatest myths and one of the most horrible myths that is perpetuated upon young women. That woman is a perfectly attractive, pleasant, articulate woman who's going to college at a real university in Boston. And on one of her TikTok videos or one of her YouTube videos, she posted her bra size.
I shared my bra size, and for some reason, girls are really mad. For context, I'm a 32 triple D. And I've been getting hate comments saying, well, like, you can't wear an extra, extra small. And that's just a 34 double D. What happened to girls support girls?
Objectively, by any standard, the woman is attractive, but not in a scary way. She has a healthy, athletic body, not being judgmental. Just, these are just facts. She, not me, said that her bra size was a 34 double D. Women have been hating it, putting up comments of hate. Whatever happened to women supporting women? All I can tell you, in my experience, in the workplace, which is all I know, in the workplace, I have rarely seen women supporting women. Rarely. And the very first time I experienced this, I was 20. I was working at an FM radio station in New York City, and the news director was a woman. And another woman broadcaster became available, a terrific news person. And I said to our woman news director, I said, what if we hired Susan? Instinctively, reflexively, she looked at me and she said, I'm the woman here. And that was that. Now, I have been in 10,000 meetings. I don't know where this DEI crap came from, because all my life I have experienced affirmative action, which is federal law enforcing DEI. Federal law. If you run a federally licensed or subsidized or funded company, like every broadcast company in America, there are certain guidelines that you are required to meet in terms of how many women, African Americans, minorities, a long list of how you're supposed to fill out those employment roles at a federally licensed facility. I suspect it's also true of nuclear power plants. Anything that requires federal licenses, there's affirmative action. I've known this all my life. This is all I've ever experienced. But in every meeting that I've been in, where are we meeting our goals? Are we meeting our goals? Never, listen to me carefully, never have I run into animosity about those goals, ever. Not one peep. I have only known leaders, CEOs, presidents, owners, who look forward to meeting those goals, have done everything in their power to meet their goals, have done everything they can to recruit. And also with the affirmative action laws, you have to keep a log of how you've recruited. You have to have a record of how you've recruited people, what those interviews were like, community standards, the whole thing. But again, I've never run into animosity about it at all, ever, from men. But women, I have seen it in the workplace too many times. I've seen it on airplanes. I have seen flight attendants, and you have too, where me in a suit, looking all Brooks Brothery, camel's hair coat. Oh, Mr. Sterling, I think we have a seat up front for you. I didn't ask for it. I didn't expect it. But I'm wearing a suit. And my hair's neat. Oh, Mr. Sterling, you want to come sit up front? Sure. I've never seen them do that for a woman. I have never seen flight attendants do that for a woman. And isn't that a shame? I have never seen this solidarity, this support. My suggestion, if you're starting out, new in the workplace, if you're a young woman, yes, you need a mentor. You need a male mentor.
I shared my bra size, and for some reason, girls are really mad. For context, I'm a 32 triple D, and I've been getting hate comments saying, well, like, you can't wear an extra, extra small, and that's just a 34 double D. What happened to girls support girls?
Doesn't happen. I'll never forget, I was at a company, a media company in Houston, Texas. And the general manager of the station, a man named Don Peterson, running a radio station for Reagan Henry. Don Peterson, one of the real good guys. And there was a young employee, someone just starting out in the workforce, a woman. And it was payday. And she gets her paycheck. And for whatever reason, in her education and her upbringing, no one had told her how you get money out of your paycheck. Don overhears this, and he quietly looks at her, and he says, do you have a checking account? Do you have an account? Do you have a way to deposit that check and get out money? And she didn't really understand most of what he had just said. Well, come with me. Let's go downstairs to the bank, and let's open a checking account together for you. And he took an hour, because it takes forever with banks, because they all suck. He took her downstairs to the bank that was in the building. And he opened a checking account with this young lady. Made sure she understood everything. Made sure she was comfortable. Understood how to cash her check, how to get her money out. He walked her through it, explained it to her, bought her a cup of coffee. And then he went on about his day. That's what a great leader does. That's what a mentor does. A mentor does not do this.
I shared my bra size, and for some reason, girls are really mad. For context, I'm a 32 triple D. And I've been getting hate comments saying, well, like, you can't wear an extra, extra small. And that's just a 34 double D. What happened to girls support girls?
A little credit for us guys. This is Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Your heart.
Walmart.
Sterling shops. Walmart. Sterling shops. Walmart.
Dateline, Texas. We've had the story about $400,000 worth of Legos were stolen from multiple Walmart stores. Walmart, the largest company in the entire world, has an amazing selection of Legos. Everybody loves Legos. So, three folks, Brian Fleming, LaDarian Anderson, were 33 years old, arrested on some charges in December of stealing all those Legos. Well, they had a third person. Her name, Sumitric Danielle Baker, 34, of Burnett, Texas. Now, when you do large-scale theft, There's a couple of reasons why you do it. Number one, because there is a way to sell said items and make a whole lot of money. Sometimes people steal from Walmart or other stores because they got to feed their family or feed a drug habit, whatever that may be. The Blue Vested Heroes, those associates at Walmart, they are on to you. And yes, we understand Legos are amazing. Three people in their 30s, though. They must either have a lot of kids, or maybe I'm missing out on the ability to fence a large amount of Legos. And if I don't understand the fencing Legos game, perhaps I'm just missing the boat here. I try to think of myself as a culturally relevant sort of guy. Maybe we're missing out, and maybe we should all be stealing Legos. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Becky and Dan Gaffney here.
We're back from Florida, and our daughter did not win Miss America. Thank goodness.
How do you even say anything after you said something like that? Where do we go from here?
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm Smutty Book author Theo Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari, and on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain what lengths cops will go to get out of working parades and demonstrations.
Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Richard Nixon.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
All right, it's the live radio show with Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. I have an email address. I answer every email. What is that noise? Oh, sorry. 855-839-1210. My email address is waltermsterling@gmail. And there's DJ CJ in upstate New York. Welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night. Hi.
Hi, Walt. How are you?
Hey.
I want to thank you for what you're covering. I used to, in Florida, I was the manager of an insurance firm. And I had 30 female employees, which was an enormous challenge. The yes. understanding was we will take separate coffee breaks, 3-4 at a time. We will talk over differences. But if you are rude to your fellow employee, you are out of work. And it's that simple. They were going to be fired. I did not tolerate cattiness and nastiness. And if they can't act like human beings, they need to move on. And our male, the guys who were our adjusters, were the nicest people in the world and the easiest people to manage. So I'm working on this. I finally went into abuse counseling and anger management, and I'm trying to work with young people so they get this ridiculous attitude out of their minds and just start being decent human beings.
How do I get you as a boss?
Give me a call and hire me.
What a delight to hear from you, and thank you very much for listening to Sterling Every Damn Sunday. I do appreciate it, and Happy New Year, my friend. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. You and I don't fit in, and that's why in just moments, it's time for Midnight Misfits, an information for who are we? Introverts, loners, but not losers. That should be the T-shirt. Loners, but not losers. Répétez. Répétez, s'il vous plaît. Gaultier, répétez. Loners, but not losers. Excellent. My email address is waltermsterling@gmail. I have a Facebook account because every radio executive and broadcaster must have social media presence. 50,000 watt signal that covers half of the United States. That's not enough. No, we must have 400 followers on Facebook and Instagram. Far more important than the 40,000 people who are listening to me right now driving up past the Buc-ee's in South Carolina, the Waffle House in North Carolina, all of the great landmarks of our culture that I personally enjoy way too much.
Hey, hey, partner.
Repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
All right, it's 6 minutes past the hour. You're a midnight misfit. You and I don't fit in, but we kind of know each other. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and now, weather.
Sterling, every night, lost in space. Mission control, baby, stop.
Mr. Scott, I received Dave Scott Spaced Out Radio merch from you, which I will post on my Facebook page shortly. I got a beautiful drinking mug, coffee mug, and a stunning T-shirt, which is excellent, beautiful art. So I'm going to post it on the Facebook page. Hopefully others will join you and get Spaced Out Radio merchandise from Dave Scott, a known Canadian. Hello, Dave. What do you think when the President of the United States, the real President of the United States, returns in a few days and says day two he's going to announce what those drones are? How do you feel about that?
I love it. I love it. This game's been going on for too long. It's a charade that's been going on for a while. We know, at least we can speculate, at least my sources know, that this is American technology that we are seeing in the sky. It's not Russia. It's not China. It's not Iran. It's not Ukraine. It's not, Kamala Harris. It is American military drones, maybe some black project. I don't think they'll announce that, but I do believe that if he does follow through with the drone aspect, they're going to say that they were testing something. Normally, there's a cover-up. There's always a little bit of truth with a lot of cover-up that goes along with it, Walter, and I do see that happening when Trump takes office.
I want to urge you to let your beautiful voice come through. Don't cover that phone with your beard. But when we hear you, you sound fantastic.
Perfect. There we go.
All right. Now, my next question to you is, when he started saying we have to own Greenland because for military reasons, I'm like, well, gee, for the past 50 years, I've never heard of a military reason for Greenland. And for all the bravado, I don't believe Russia is any threat to us at all. As you and I have discussed, I believe we came to an agreement about 1968 to say, okay, we're evenly matched in terms of power. We're never going to attack each other, and we'll just watch these other cute little nations goof around, and we'll shut them up when we have to. I don't feel that it, when he says, well, Russia, you know, that's baloney. I believe the military threat is what you and I have discussed, which there's a UFO base there, and I believe he wants control of that UFO base.
Well, you know what? It is going to end one of the longest wars that nobody knows about if Trump takes over Greenland. I bet you don't even know this, Walter. There is an island between Greenland and Canada, a very tiny island. You know, you might be able to put a house with a picket fence on it. Really worthless, okay? But every time the Danish Navy goes and sails by that island, they take down the Canadian flag and they raise a Danish flag and put a bottle of Danish booze on the island. And then when the Canadian Navy sails by, they take down the Danish flag, they put up a Canadian flag, and they leave a bottle of Canadian whiskey. Now, this has been going on for about 54 years, this war over this island between Canada and Denmark. And if the U.S. takes over Greenland, I'm not sure if that war continues.
Who drinks the bottles?
Well, I'm assuming the people on the ship drink the bottles.
Got it. Well, it clearly is a very dangerous situation with that little island. I think that the other thing that I never got a good explanation for, when Barack Obama was president, he went to Greenland for like a day. And I'll never forget this. He went to Greenland for a day. No official explanation. Why the hell would he go to Greenland for a day? Made no sense. And I believe that's why.
I didn't even know he went.
Yeah, he did. He went for a day. And I believe he went to see the base, to see what Admiral Byrd saw.
Well, I haven't heard of any potential bases in Denmark. Now, I have heard that there is one in the Arctic Circle. There's one near Siberia. There is one near on South Antarctica. Okay, there are bases there that they claim. There's even one in the mountains in between California and Washington State somewhere, allegedly. And then there is apparently another base somewhere near the Aleutians, but that may be one that is shared with the United States military. Go figure. So there are experts who have remote viewed and believe that there are military, or pardon, alien bases on this planet. I believe they counted between 4 and 7. Now, whether or not those are true or not, we don't know. But these people who claim that they are true, well, they may have a little bit more insider information than I do on that.
Dave Scott, do you have other information and updates that you'd like to share with us tonight on Sterling Every Damn Sunday? Yes, sir. Go.
You want me to bring the UFO news? So I'm bringing the UFO news. John Greenwald from the blackvault.com, who is very well known for his FOIA requests. He's literally got hundreds of thousands of notes on everything from CIA to UFOs and everything. Well, he just released a note today about how UFO whistleblower David Grush secretly met with Canadian Member of Parliament Larry McGuire. And what's interesting about this was they talked everything from joint UFO talks between Canada and the United States, alien bases, where these things are from, etc. Except there was one thing that upset me, Walter. One thing that upset me is Greenwald is saying this is brand new news. We got it. We got it. I had it first a year and a half ago. And the UFO world kept quiet. So my ego is a little bit bruised right now over that story. But nonetheless, he actually got the actual paperwork from the Canadian government basically saying, yes, this talk happened. Yes, they were talking UFOs. And Larry McGuire, he started, for people who don't know him, he's from a very small town in the province of Manitoba. But he has been on the UFO kick for about 5-6 years now. And he started following me on X out of the blue. And I was like, what is this Canadian member of parliament following a UFO podcast radio show for? And yet, lo and behold, I've talked to his people. I've talked to many other people within the Canadian government about UAP / UFOs, and they are very interested to see what Canada's role is on this. So the confirmation of this conversation actually is good, because Greenwald does have it on paper. I had it on Word a year and a half ago. But it just goes to show that there are these conversations happening between American government officials and Canadian government officials, that they are taking this subject seriously.
Well, it's about time. That's the great Dave Scott. How do we see your show on YouTube?
I am always live Monday through Friday, starting at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. I always say to people, listen to Sterling every damn night, first and foremost. When that ends, you can come on over, because we're going to invite you all in as well. And if you're in my YouTube chat room, let me know you're a Midnight Misfit. I want to say a special hello to you.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much, Dave Scott. Now, I have an update about the L.A. fire death toll. It has gone up to 24 as residents brace for 72 hours of hell amid new weather warnings. Ready? Meteorologists warn that residents in the fire-ravaged evacuation zone, life-threatening winds reaching 70 miles an hour will pick up tonight and last through Wednesday, heightening the risk for fires to spread even further across Southern California. The general duration of this is not looking good, says meteorologist Rose Schoenfeld. The weather warning also prevents locals from returning home to inspect the damage and makes it more challenging for first responders. Four fires have burned through 40,000 acres of the most affluent neighborhoods in North America. 24 people are now confirmed dead as a result of the fires. Walter M. Sterling, Sterling every damn Sunday.
Talking jack, bullets over trailer parks under the moonlit sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to explain what lengths NYPD cops will go to get out of working parades and demonstrations. It was the mid-90s and I was finishing my 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. shift. And when my partner and I got to the steps of the precinct, we were greeted by a cop who said, "Do you guys want to work overtime tomorrow?" And I said, "Not particularly." He says, "Well," he says, "they're closing down the peep shows and sex shops in Midtown Manhattan, and they're going to have a protest, and they want everybody to come in at 4 in the morning tomorrow." The following day was my day off. I had no intention of coming in. So I said, "No, no thanks." He says, "Well, be careful." He said, "The administrative lieutenant's looking to grab people." So I poked my head in the precinct. I didn't see him. I walk up to the sign-out sheet. I'm about 4 deep. And I hear, "Ferrari, did anybody see Ferrari?" And I heard my administrative lieutenant. So I got off the line and I quickly ran up the stairs to the locker room, where I was greeted by another cop that was hiding. And I says, "What are you doing up here?" He goes, "The administrative lieutenant is trying to grab me and you to work that detail tomorrow." So I said, "No, I'm not working it." So me and this other cop hid in the locker room for about a half hour. And it wasn't just the administrative lieutenant we had to be careful for. He had one of his lackeys. It was a female cop who would do his bidding. And we used to call her Wendy the Whiner, because she used to cry about everything. So anyway, me and this other cop were at the top of the stairs. We don't see anybody. And I says, "What do you want to do?" He says, "Well, if we walk downstairs together," he goes, "there's a chance if they pop out, we're both going to get grabbed. What do you say we go out one at a time?" I said, "All right." So we flip a coin. He goes first. He walks down the stairs. I watch him. He disappears. I don't hear any commotion. I wait about 5 minutes and I go, "All right, he must have made it." So I start coming down the stairs. I slowly slip past the roll call office where they are. And I hear, "Was that Ferrari?" So now I start running, right? I hear, "Ferrari, is that you?" And the way the building was set up, there was a lot of twists and turns. And I was fast back in those days. I ran out of the precinct, I jumped down the stairs and I took off down Sedgwick Avenue, and next to the precinct was a gas station, and I hear this female cop yelling, "Was that Ferrari?" I ran into the gas station next door, and there was an old Spanish guy that used to fix our cars, and I said, "Hide me." And he started laughing, so I hid in one of the back bays of the gas station while this female cop was going up and down Sedgwick Avenue looking for me. Thank God she didn't know what kind of car I drove. About 10 minutes later, when she went back into the station house, I popped back out, got in my car, and went home. When I returned to work a couple of days later, my administrative lieutenant said, "You didn't want to work overtime?" I said, "No, no one said anything to me." So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
Becky and Dan Gaffney here.
We're back from Florida, and our daughter did not win Miss America. Thank goodness.
How do you even say anything after you said something like that? Where do we go from here?
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and I have a late-night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night. Inspired by kazoo players.
So many people play the kazoo wrong, so I'm going to share the secret with you. As a professional kazoo player, I don't want to brag or anything, but I am the best at what I do. You don't play it like this. You don't even play it with a thick end. You actually take the little bucket part, put it to your belly button, and nothing's going to play because you are the one being played, my friend. Don't text back your ex.
All right, 26 past the hour. Good evening, Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday. Sunday. Oh, that means The Sopranos. This was my favorite scene from The Sopranos. When Tony felt that his father or uncle was not being treated right by his doctor. And he couldn't get his doctor on the phone. So he tracked down the doctor on the golf course. Oh, come on. Oh, look at this. Now I have the wheel of death.
What are you doing?
Hey, Doc. Hey, Tony. Come on, I'm surprised. His nephew.
You belong to this club?
Me? No.
Unbelievable. We'll try it once more. Why is it giving me a hard time? It was working so well up till this second. So disturbing. Well, you're just going to have to wait till next week to see how that worked out. To see what it was that Tony said to the doctor on the golf course. Want to try once more? Okay, I can. It won't do it. It's weird. So disturbing. So unprofessional. Oh, my God. All right. Now, listen, my 12-year-old is we're planning for next year because she has apraxia and she has autism. And she's done so well in the school that she's in now. We're already doing what we have to do to get her into the same school in sixth grade. This is a huge event, as you may know. It isn't just like, okay, she's going to go to the same school next year. I have to fill out 8 zillion forms. And then, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a kid in college, I'm going to say a dirty word to you. If you want to hit the delay affiliates, you can. You ready? FAFSA. FAFSA. Oh, my God. Is there anything harder to do than to fill out federal assistance tuition forms? I don't know what it all stands for, but to get federal aid and grants and Sally Mae, it requires, forget about being a legacy. You have to be more than a legacy. You have to have a master's degree in math to fill out those damn forms. I have two kids in college, and right now we have to make sure that all their money's lined up for the spring semester and the fall semester. When you register for financial aid, it's for a year. You have to sign up for a year, and you can't take a few courses and pay less or borrow less. The only way you can get a Sallie Mae loan is to borrow for a full semester worth of courses. You can't just take one or two. You have to borrow to the max. I am the only person on the radio who has no problem with federal loans being forgiven. because it is the federal government's regulations and requirements of those colleges that has raised the cost of going to college. The same people who will loan you the money are the organizations that are responsible for the costs increasing. You think any professor's gotten a raise? You think any adjunct professor's gotten a raise? No, no, no. It's all rules and regulations and staffing required by the federal government. And therefore, if you make a federal loan, they're paying themselves. And then if they say, oh, we're going to be magnanimous and forgive the loans, they're responsible for the need of the loans. I love my life. All right, good evening. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday. I'm Walter M. Sterling, live on the radio.
Sterling at Night, inspired by a single guy.
Whenever I meet a pretty girl, the first thing I look for is intelligence. Because if she doesn't have that, then she's mine.
They live in a 150-year-old house. They got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night. Ah!
Hi, I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you stories of living in our old house with our 8 kids. Our daughter just finished her competition at Miss America, so we're back from Florida. We did the whole thing, the Disney, the Miss America. Woo! It's good to be home.
It really is. We did have a great time. We did do some things while we were down there. We didn't, like, run the whole Orlando gamut because it was in Orlando, Florida now that the organization supposedly doesn't belong to the guy that owned it in Atlantic City. Now someone else owns it, but there's a lawsuit and no one really knows who owns it, but for right now it's in Florida. So anyway, we were in Orlando instead of very close to home in Atlantic City.
Very interesting what's going on with Miss America. Look it up.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird. It's like nobody knows who the actual owner is and what's going on. So it feels like kind of when we are in the middle of something, there's always a controversy. It can't just be, hey, we're going to go, we're going to do this great thing. There's always something weird and we can't help but look at the weird.
During the competition in the preliminary rounds, I was a nervous wreck watching her. I wanted to leave the theater.
Yeah, he was an absolute nervous wreck. And I mean, it was, you got to think that you're there. And number one, there's always a different kind of judge who wants a different kind of thing. And growing up, I guess, or growing as a mom, learning that in all of kinds of different competition, you kind of can tell what's going to happen by the judges that they pick. So, for instance, Nova, she's a professional ballerina, so she goes and she's doing a classical ballet, a professional ballerina doing a variation, and you have all Broadway singers, you know she's not going to win talent at that time. Same kind of thing with when she was a kid and you would go and all of the different judges on the panel would be Balanchine dancers and Nova was a Vagatova dancer. Like, you just kind of, you know what's going to happen. So I'm not a nervous wreck, but Dan, the entire time, nervous wreck.
Right.
It's a different kind of competition. It's a different kind of thing. 52 girls. And you're just, it's like the train is running the whole time. Everything is busy. The girls are getting 90 minutes of sleep some nights, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning or 4 a.m. to go head to their thing, not getting back until midnight. It is just it's a crazy week, a crazy, crazy week. And if you ever want to go or you need to know anything about it, you know, just message me if you need a little bit of education on how the whole thing works.
We brought her home, not as Miss America, but still as Miss Delaware.
And thank goodness we did, because I want her back. I'm glad to have her here, and we have work to finish here.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you want to know anything about the ins and outs of how to be a pageant mom who's not really a pageant mom, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night, inspired by Judge Judy.
What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
Sterling every night. Study books, rusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late-night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my short story, Sweet Escape. Wes cut into his creation, revealing layers of rich, moist chocolate. He set a triangle of cake on a plate, laid a fork next to it, and slid it over to her. Unable to resist, Layla took the first bite without waiting for him. She closed her eyes when the sweet dessert touched her tongue, letting the flavor spread through her mouth before she swallowed. To her delight, it tasted even better than it smelled. She took another bite and shuddered, savoring the rare luxury of the meal. How is it? Wes's voice interrupted her indulgence. She opened her eyes and blushed as she imagined what she must have looked like while eating. Amazing, she said. I can't remember the last time I ate something so delicious. Glad you like it. He grabbed a second chair and dropped it next to hers. After he sat, he speared his slice with his fork and popped a piece into his mouth. Good thing I didn't forget the recipe. They ate in silence, the only sound in the room, the scraping of the metal tines against their plates. When she reached the end of her piece, Layla exhaled a wistful sigh. Thank you. This made me feel normal for the first time in ages. His eyebrow arched. What do you mean? She twirled the fork in her fingers. It reminded me of birthday parties and holidays and all those other happy times. You know, when people get together to celebrate and enjoy themselves. You usually don't eat cake when you're worried about something else. He gestured toward her empty plate. Would you like more? I shouldn't. Rolling her eyes, she let out a short laugh. That's another part of the gatherings, the unspoken social rules. All the women have to pretend it's a crime to eat dessert, and they say things like, I shouldn't. How ridiculous. She rubbed the strap of her new tank top between her fingers, tugging it back into place. When she tried to laugh again, it came out as more of a snort. If only they could see me now. Enjoying an extra slice of cake is the least of my worries. I'm such a mess. Layla, there is nothing wrong with how you look. Believe me. The sound of her name, spoken with the edge in his voice, made her jerk her head up. She caught his gaze roaming over her body, studying her from head to toe, and a wave of heat flooded her cheeks. I never thought you noticed me like that, she mumbled. He didn't look away. It's hard not to. She struggled not to squirm beneath his scrutiny and fought to ignore the fire simmering beneath her skin. Maybe I will have another slice then, she said, trying to keep her tone airy and casual. Wes picked up the knife and cut a wedge out of the cake. Instead of serving it to her, he placed the slice onto his own plate. He scooped a small piece onto his fork and held it out to her, a devilish glint shimmering in his eyes. Her breath caught in her throat. Heart pounding, she leaned forward to accept his offer. he held the fork still as she ate from it, and the chocolate tasted even more delectable than her first bite. A murmur of appreciation left her lips, one she didn't try to camouflage. He loaded up the fork a second time and extended it. It was a surprisingly intimate act, feeding her the luscious dessert. Yet she enjoyed the thrill it gave her. She let the morsel linger before swallowing, then waited for more. Wes set the fork down next to his plate. Before she could object, he used his fingertip to swipe a dollop of frosting from the wider end of the slice. With the same wordless gesture, he presented her with the enticing treat. Tinges of insecurity flitted through her mind, but she knew what she wanted. Layla sucked his finger into her mouth, her eyes never leaving his. She licked the frosting from him, swirling her tongue around. His fervent stare burned into her, and she was sure her cheeks were a vibrant shade of scarlet, yet she didn't relent. Though they'd traveled with each other for endless days, this was the first time she felt a strong connection to him. She craved more of his attention. Slowly, he withdrew his finger. She watched for his reaction, waiting to see what would happen next. He picked up the fork again. This time, he ate his piece of cake in an exaggerated movement. When he removed the utensil from his mouth, a smear of frosting remained on his upper lip. She'd learned from their time spent together that Wes did nothing unintentionally. As she eyed him with suspicion, she spotted the slightest hint of a smirk curling his mouth upward. It was the closest thing to a smile she'd seen from him since they'd met. The invitation was clear. She stood. He swiveled away from the table and sat back in his chair. With one step, she closed the gap between them, her face hovering several inches above his. Clear gray eyes, the color of the summer sky before a storm, looked up at her. In one infinite moment, she swore he could hear every thought ricocheting through her head. Their lips met, gently at first. Besides the sweetness of the chocolate, she tasted something distinctive, something that was him. Moving closer, she ran her hands up his shoulders and laced her fingers behind his neck. Her tongue tangled with his in lazy spirals, probing and exploring his mouth. His palms skimmed over her sides, coming to rest on the swell of her hips. The initial tenderness vanished, and he kissed her with more force. She met his advances, pulling his body nearer to hers. Fingertips slipped beneath the hem of her tank top, grazing her bare skin. Layla gasped, and his tongue plunged deeper into her mouth. With her arms draped around him, she maneuvered onto his lap. It had been so long since anyone had touched her in such a provocative way, and she yearned to feel more of him. He broke the kiss, bringing his lips to the edge of her ear. "Let's go upstairs," he whispered. His warm breath across her sensitive nerves, along with his suggestion, made her tremble. She slid off his lap and nodded. He took several steps toward the staircase, then paused. Backtracking, he picked up the cake platter with one hand, seized her wrist with the other, and led her up the stairs. Moonlight streamed in through the windows of the bakery's upper level. Wes placed the cake atop the lopsided nightstand.
He circled one arm around her waist and drew her in for another crushing kiss before nudging her back toward the mattress. Layla sat and kicked off her shoes before swinging her legs up. She started to recline, but he stopped her. Shirt off, too. Her fingers shook, yet she tugged the tank top off over her head and tossed it to the side. Pulse racing, she lay back on the bed, exposed. He removed his own t-shirt in one swift motion and stood over her, hunger evident in his smoldering stare. He sat beside her on the mattress. With the backs of his fingers, he caressed her cheek. His fingertips trailed down her neck to the center of her bare chest, skating over her skin. Using the lightest of touches, he outlined the curve of her chest, the feathery sensations driving her wild. She whimpered as her back arched, desperate for more. Wes took the platter off the nightstand and balanced it on his leg. He scooped another glob of frosting onto his finger and held it out. Instead of letting her lick it off, he used the creamy chocolate to paint a line along the same path he'd traced. Anticipation coiled inside her when she contemplated how he'd clean the mess he made. A low chuckle resonated from his chest as he spread two more dollops across her. She inhaled sharply, and a fresh wave of arousal rippled through her. He returned the plate to the nightstand. Propping himself up with an arm on either side of her, he ducked his head and lapped at the top of the stripe of frosting at the base of her throat. Kisses and nibbles covered her skin as he worked his way down. Unable to move very far, she stroked his sides and back, pressing into his taut muscles. He lowered his torso onto hers, smearing some of the chocolate between them. The sticky heat and pressure made her writhe beneath him, but he folded his arms around her and held her tight. Oh my, I think I'd better stop here for tonight. But you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my short story, Sweet Escape, which is available at Amazon on Kindle Unlimited. If you have any thoughts you'd like to share with me, you can email me at smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling every damn night. Damn night.